As the date of departure approached, Magellan turned his attention to the complicated and hugely expensive matter of provisioning. The ships took on all the sailing gear, arms, provisions, and furnishings that they would bring on the voyage. The dock and the area around it throbbed with activity, the waters constantly stirred by small craft coming and going, the streets packed with carts bearing supplies. Magellan approached the task of provisioning with as much attention to detail as he did the outfitting of the ships, and with good reason. The food represented a considerable investment, 1,252,909 maravedis, nearly as much as the cost of the entire fleet, and that figure covered just enough food to see them through the first leg or two of the voyage. It was expected that the sailors would be looking for additional food at almost every port and in the ocean itself. Of the food that Magellan took on at Seville, nearly four-fifths consisted of just two items, wine and hardtack. Hardtack was a mixture of coarse wheat flour, including the husk, and hot water, never cold. It was cooked twice. The result, a tough, brittle biscuit known as biscacho, was stored for up to a month before it was sold. The ships also held flour stored in wooden barrels, as well as meat, usually pork, bacon, ham, and especially salted beef. Barrels of cheese, almonds in the shell, mustard, and casks of figs were also loaded on board. As unlikely as it sounds, Magellan's fleet carried fish, sardines, cod, anchovies, and tuna, all of it dried and salted. In expectation of catching fresh fish along their route, the ship's holds included a generous amount of fishing line and a plentiful supply of hooks. There was little in the way of fresh vegetables. Instead, the sailors consumed chickpeas, beans, rice, garlic, almonds, lentils. All fruit was preserved. Raisins were a particular favorite of the sailors. The officers brought with them a delicacy in the form of preserved quince, a jam made from the small, hard, apple-like fruit. As the voyage wore on, quince jelly would play a crucial role in the lives of the sailors and Magellan's as well. There were casks filled with vinegar, which was used as a disinfectant both for the ships and for contaminated water. On rare occasions, starving sailors would add vinegar to rotting hardtack. Sugar and salt also had a place in the list of provisions. Salt was plentiful and was used for preserving meat and fish throughout the voyage, while sugar was scarce. It was administered to sailors who had fallen ill, but not used in food. Honey, far cheaper, served as the universal sweetener. Disputes over the crew's composition bedeviled Magellan until the moment of the fleet's departure from Seville. Magellan was suspected of packing the roster with his countrymen, but the reality was that experienced Spanish seamen willing to enlist on the voyage were scarce, and so he was forced to include many foreigners. He was reminded that key positions, such as bookkeepers and bursars, must be filled by Spaniards. Magellan protested that he had retained the services of only two Portuguese bursars, and he pleaded in writing with the Casa de Contratación to allow the men that he had enlisted to board the ships, regardless of nationality. If he could not have the crew he wanted, he insisted he would abandon the expedition. The Casa wouldn't let matters rest there. On the day before the fleet's departure from Seville, August 9, 1519, Magellan was summoned from his frantic last-minute preparations to testify that he had made every effort to hire Spanish officers and crew members rather than foreigners. He had, in fact, gone to great lengths to comply. Qualified sailors were rare in Seville, and qualified sailors willing to risk their lives on a voyage to the Spice Islands rarer still. As matters stood at the time of departure, Magellan had official permission to hire only a dozen Portuguese. In reality, he was taking nearly 40 with him. At the last minute, he sacrificed three relatives, whom he had quietly enlisted, one of whom was a pilot approved by the Casa. But he kept berths for two others, Álvaro de Mesquita, a relative on his mother's side, and Cristóbal Rebelo, his illegitimate son. Magellan's last-minute compromises on the composition of the crew placated the Casa, and the Captain General received final permission to proceed with the expedition. To guarantee this voyage, he had sacrificed his allegiance to his homeland, his partnership with Ruy Falero, and a considerable amount of his authority as captain general. But he had kept his essential mission intact. After 12 months of painstaking preparation, the Armada de Malacca was at last ready to conquer the ocean. Just before departure, the officers and crew of the five ships comprising the fleet attended a mass at Santa Maria de la Victoria, located in Triana, the sailors' district. During the ceremony, a representative of King Charles presented Magellan with the royal flag as the captain general knelt before a representation of the Virgin. This marked the first occasion that Charles had bestowed the royal colors on a non-Castilian. Still kneeling, Magellan swore that he was the king's faithful servant, that he would fulfill all his obligations to guarantee the success of the expedition. Among those in attendance at Santa Maria de la Victoria that day was a Venetian scholar named Antonio Pigafetta, who had spent long years in the service of Andrea Chiaracati, an emissary of Pope Leo X. When the Pope appointed Chiaracati ambassador to King Charles, Pigafetta, who was about 30 years old at the time, followed the diplomat to Spain. Pigafetta was a man of learning and religious conviction, but he also had a thirst for adventure. Learning of Magellan's expedition to the Spice Islands, he felt destiny calling, and he excused himself from the diplomatic circles to seek out the renowned navigator, arriving in Seville in May 1519, in the midst of feverish preparations for the expedition. During the next several months, he helped to gather navigational instruments and ingratiated himself into Magellan's trust. Pigafetta quickly came to idolize the captain general, despite their differing nationalities, and was awestricken by the ambitiousness and danger of the mission. Nevertheless, Pigafetta decided he had to go along. He joined the roster as a sobra saliente, a supernumerary. Magellan, who left nothing to accident, had an assignment for Pigafetta. The young Italian diplomat was to keep a record of the voyage, not the dry, factual pilot's log, but a more personal, anecdotal, and free-flowing account in the tradition of other popular travel works of the day. Pigafetta readily accepted this assignment. His loyalties belonged to Magellan alone, not to Cartagena or to any of the other officers. For Pigafetta, the Armada de Malacca was the tangible result of Magellan's daring, and if the expedition succeeded, it would be the result of Magellan's skill and God's will. Of that, Pigafetta was quite certain. Pigafetta was not the only diarist on the voyage. Francisco Albo, Trinidad's pilot, kept a logbook, and some of the surviving sailors gave extensive interviews and depositions on their return to Spain, or wrote their own accounts from memory. The Portuguese reacted bitterly to the imminent departure of the Armada de Malacca. King Manuel ordered the harassment of Magellan's relatives who remained in their homeland. To make his dishonor public, vandals were sent to the family estate in Sabrosa. They tore the Magellan escutcheon from the gates and smashed it to the ground. Abandoned, the Sabrosa estate fell into disrepair, and another house rose on the site. The stone that once held the Magellan escutcheon met with a special fate. It was covered with excrement.